Hello, this is Tom Campbell, the host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Larry Wiegand and Dick Wiegand from the band The Ravons, and also joining them is Dave Middlemist. Today is January 30th, 2010, and I'm talking with Larry Wiegand, Dick Wiegand, and Dave Middlemist. Let's start and go around. If you wouldn't mind, give me your full name and your date of birth and your hometown. Dave.
My name's David Middlemist, or Kink Middlemist. Date of birth, I was born September 12th, 1947, in the city of North Minneapolis.
Dick.
In North Minneapolis.
I'm Richard Wiegand. My date of birth is 12/15/1946, and I was born in Minneapolis.
Larry Wiegand, born December 5th, 1947, in Minneapolis.
Where'd you guys go to high school?
Larry went to Richfield.
You don't have to say your name. We'll figure it out.
I went to Richfield High School also.
I went to Patrick Henry High School.
Is that in North Minneapolis?
Yes.
And Larry and Dick at Richfield High School?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Do you recall the first local band that you saw play live? The very first one?
I think we were in the first local band that played live. And my recollection is in the summer of 1962, me and Dick actually left the house and played somewhere else other than the house. So,
and you had a band going in 1962?
Yeah. We had a band called The Knights. And
hold on. Did you skip somebody? Katz and his Confederates?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah, I might have. Yeah.
Okay.
The first name of our first band was called Katz and his Confederates, and there was a guy named Terry Katz-Midas, and Dick Thomas was the drummer.
Terry or Chris Katz-Midas?
Well, both. We could never figure out what to call him. His name was Terry and Chris, so... You figure it out.
So you put this band, you're not even in high school then.
No, we're in high school.
You're in high school.
Yeah, I was a sophomore, and I think Dick was a junior, or I might have been in ninth grade, and Dick was a sophomore. I can't remember.
Okay, who's playing what in Katz and his Confederates?
Well, Terry, or Chris, played guitar and sang. I played guitar. Larry played bass, and Dick Thomas played drums. And we did material like The Ventures and some older type tunes.
We couldn't sing.
We couldn't sing, so...
No, we just played music.
Yeah. I wouldn't even really call it... It was a get-together. It was a very early version of a band.
Okay, and that band transformed into...
Into The Knights.
Into The Knights.
And who was in The Knights?
Well, The Knights were...
Lonnie Knight.
Lonnie, no, this is before Lonnie, actually. Let's see now. Got to get this right. That band was the same people, only we changed the name to The Knights, and then immediately we lost two of those guys. They went in the service, both of them.
Which two did you lose?
Dick Thomas went in the Marines, and Chris, or Terry, went into the Navy. And so then we got Lonnie Knight and a guy named Skip Kovacs was playing. Now, at the same time, we used to play parties with a guy named Denny Craswell.
Okay.
Who was like in third grade or something at the time.
Yeah, fourth.
He was pretty young. And so he would fill in, but he wasn't our official drummer. A guy named Skip Kovacs was our drummer at the time.
And then he went in the Navy.
Then we got, well, then we changed our name. Before he went in the Navy, we changed our name to Robbie and the Ravons. We added a singer named Robbie Hardell. And then we were five-piece, Robbie and the Ravons. And then Skip and Rob went in the service. And then so we got Harry Nils at that point. And we just kept the name Ravons from 63 to 67. That was the Ravons.
So... There was a change here from playing all instrumentals to going into some vocals then?
Yeah.
When you had Robbie?
when we had Robbie, we started actually doing, you know,
Hank Williams, stuff like that.
Well, we were doing all the stuff that was popular at the time, Chuck Berry's songs, Buddy Holly songs, early rock stuff, Eddie Cochran.
And
Elvis, you know, that's what we were playing.
And you're playing this is playing private parties and things for your friends and
stuff? With Robbie and the Ravens, we started playing bigger gigs. We were doing like Bloomington Roller Rinks, and we were doing some other, all of a sudden the gigs were no longer frat parties and pizza places. We started playing at teen dances and stuff.
So. The Bloomington Roller Rink on 94th and Lindale?
That's correct.
And what other places did Robbie and the Ravens play?
Well, I remember a place that we worked down in Arlington, Minnesota. It was some dance hall down there. And
we worked at the Gibbon Ballroom. We worked at
where was the Gibbon Ballroom?
In Gibbon, Minnesota.
Gibbon, Minnesota.
Yeah.
In Gaylord.
We played in Glencoe, and we played at Kimball, Minnesota, at the Playland or the Playmore Ballroom, whatever that was.
Yeah.
New Munich, all these ballroom things started coming along. Frederick Rec Hall, Marion Ballroom.
In Bloomington, Marion Hall?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about Mr. Lucky's?
And we, towards the mid, you know, like 64, then we started getting those kind of gigs. Mr. Lucky's, and we played at that ballroom down in Nicollet on 14th and Nicollet.
The Marigold.
Marigold. And we played at the prom a couple of times. We backed up some people over there. And
well, so you're actually being booked by an agent?
Yeah, well, not quite yet. That happened in 65.
Well, how are you getting these gigs out of?
Well, we were working through Bill Deal, and a guy named Bob Brazel was an agent that we used to use, and he was the one that booked a lot of these. And Bill Deal was involved with that.
But you're still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to book these gigs on the weekends?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's go around, and I'm going to ask you what your first instrument you bought, what kind it was, and where you bought it. Dave?
It was a Supro.
No. I bought a guitar.
Guitar?
16 guitar. I don't recall the brand name. My sister had one, a Stella guitar, which was, you know, that much string clearance, about an inch. But anyway, I bought one, started farting around with it, got into that. And I do remember having a Stratocaster and a Fender Twin Reverb.
So you started on guitar and...
Started on guitar and got it going on that, and would just sit along and play with, put a record on and sit along and learn it, play with it.
Okay.
Do all that kinds of stuff.
Do you remember the place you purchased your first guitar?
B-sharp. I bet it was B-sharp. I'm pretty sure it was.
Dick, how about you? First instrument?
The first instrument I had was a Silvertone Archtop guitar. And I took lessons from a guy who was kind of a jazz musician, but he taught me the basics on it. And I can't remember if I got the guitar through him. I believe I did. I got it through the store where he worked.
Where was that?
It was a little Dells. Storefront place up. No, it wasn't Dells. No, it was a little storefront place up on 76th and Lindale. And I believe I got it through him. And it was like a student's guitar.
Was it in Bloomington at the Red Owl Shopping Center?
No, it was on 76th and Lindale.
Okay.
That's no longer there anymore, but...
Okay, did you get an amp too?
No, this was a completely acoustic guitar.
Acoustic.
Yeah.
When did you buy your first electric guitar?
I bought my first electric guitar at Tressman Music in Richfield.
And what kind was it?
It was a Fender Telecaster. A 1954 Fender Telecaster.
And Trustman was right on 66th and Nicollet?
The first store was.
The first store was on 65th and Nicollet.
65th and Nicollet. Yeah. Okay, Larry, first bass guitar.
First bass guitar was a Supro three-quarter model $82 guitar. And I think I bought that at Dell's Music in Richfield.
And yeah, I assume you bought an amp too.
No, actually, we were kind of dealing with Dells and Trustman music, and I used when we did play gigs. I mean, my first bass amp was a basement amp that I bought from, I believe it was Trustman, but that didn't work out too well. Anyway, I was actually leasing bass amps from Trustman.
Oh, okay.
So if I have a gig, I'd go pay him like too much money and. Get it for the gig.
good old Irv.
Now, outside of your own bands, let's go around again. Start with Dave and tell me the very first local band you saw play live.
I don't know if I can tell you. If I can remember, I would bet you $100 it was Ryan's Bass Lake Ballroom, and it was probably the Underbeats or the Accents. Or something, which totally blew me away.
That would have been up in Plymouth?
Right on Bass Lake. It's not there anymore, but it's, yeah, in Plymouth.
Okay.
I actually live about a mile from there now, but Dick, in high school we used to go there a lot and dance, and that's what got me into the feeling of, I want to do that.
Looked like fun,
yeah.
Dick, first local band you saw play live, and where?
The first local band I ever saw play live was a group that I sat in with, and it was run by the guy Cornelius Growth, who owned the Growth Music Store downtown. They had a horn band, and they needed somebody to play guitar, and I sat in with them. But the first rock band I remember ever hearing was probably the Trashmen, or the Underbeats, or the Accents. It was back in that time frame.
Okay, how about you, Larry? Do you recall?
Well, the first band that I can recollect was either, I think it was Damon Lee and the Diablos with Nicerm on drums, and Kenny Sands was playing guitar at Bloomington Roller Rink. And then it was either them or the Trashmen were the first two live big bands. And this was pretty early. I think I was 1962, something like that.
When bands played at roller rinks, did they set up in the middle of the skating floor or off to the side?
Right by the garage door. We got pictures of it when we played there. We were right next to the garage door.
They had a little riser that they put the band on, right by the garage door.
Yep.
Wow.
So.
I should add that the Trashmen, it's a funny thing that Tony Andreessen lived. I lived on 40th and Russell. He lived on 40th and Sheridan. Nice to hear them practice.
You could hear the Trashmen practice.
Yeah, and I'm going, man, I want to do that. And that was part of what had got me going, too. And I knew his younger brother, Mark, at the time, who's now playing drums with him.
Right, exactly.
And did their European tour, so...
All right, we're going to go around again, and this time I want to ask you all if you recall the first 45 or album you purchased and where you purchased it. Dave, want to start?
Wow.
It would have been a surf album.
Ventures?
Yeah.
Probably if your Ventures is be a good guess.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
Pre-Beatles. Yeah. I definitely had surf albums. I know I had several surf albums.
Dick, how about you? What comes to mind?
You won't believe this, but the first 45 I ever bought was Let's Get Together by Haley Mills. Because it had such a rockin' guitar part in it. And that was probably in 58, something like that. The next one after that was The Ventures when they had Walk Don't Run.
Do you recall where you bought your first records?
Ward's in Bloomington.
Okay, Larry.
Well, I'm trying to think. That just struck a chord with me. I think I bought something before The Ventures, come to think of it. One of those goofy tunes like Blind-Haired Purple People Eater or something. I don't know what it was, but it was some dark.
The Purple People Eater.
Yeah, it was a novelty song. It was something like that. But I distinctly, and I have this memory really good, and I've told Dick about this before, but when we used to jump on these trampolines in Richfield when we were kids growing up, and they had this transistor radio right by where we used to hang out at this golf course, and they had trampolines there. And they started Walk Don't Run one day, and we had never heard that before. And we literally stopped in our tracks, and I walked over there, and I said, listen to this, and the drummer starts it off, you know. And from that point on, we were done. It was over, because that's what we wanted to do from, in my mind. When I heard Walk Don't Run, that changed everything.
Why did the Ventures have such an impact on you three guys? What was it about their music that hit a, struck a chord with you, so to speak?
Well, first of all, we couldn't sing, and yeah, we figured with a little practice we could possibly do this stuff. It was cool at the time, and it was something for dorky little teenagers like us to reach for, and it appealed to us. And I'm finding out that it appealed to a lot of people at the time.
It wasn't real difficult music to
learn. No, I mean, with a little practice, you could actually get close to what they were doing.
So you heard a song on the radio and you thought, hey, that's something we could learn how to play.
Well, that kind of sparked my imagination about getting into music. Now, Dick was playing guitar before I got into music. I was actually banging on a drum first.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
And, well, it didn't last very long. And I got bored with it really fast. There wasn't any notes.
Does anybody recall the Hi-Fi Records store at the Hub Shopping Center?
Yes, I remember. Well, I was there a lot. We used to buy Duane Eddy stuff in there. Yeah.
Oh, Duane Eddy.
Yeah, Duane Eddy. And
again, mostly instrumentals.
All instrumental stuff, yeah.
I was a big fan of his Cannonball.
You know, come to think of it, I remember the first couple of gigs we worked, there was very few vocals that we did. It was mostly surf instrumental songs.
Yeah.
And we did that for quite a while. And then I believe it was Robbie, I guess, from the Ravines that kind of brought the vocal thing into the band.
Well, Lonnie owned a microphone, so he ended up singing first. But, I mean, when Robbie left the Ravines and went into service, Lonnie started singing lead because he had a microphone.
Uh-huh.
And we never really even tried to do anything. And he was into Buddy Holly, and he was doing some of that kind of stuff back in those days. And he was, when he came out of the Castaways, he was actually singing. But with us, until Robbie left the band, he hadn't sang. We were so nervous about this, we used to set up behind our amps. We'd put our amps in front of us and stand behind them when we were playing. That's how nervous we were.
So you had rather primitive equipment at this point.
Oh, yeah.
No sound man?
Oh, absolutely not.
No. No.
Now, I recall going into Hi-Fi Records myself, and you could actually ask the person who was working there if they would play you a record before you bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like something you recall?
Yes. I do remember that.
That was a wonderful service that they provided.
Yeah. They used to wash windshields in those days and check your oil, too.
At the gas stations. Yes, I actually do recall that. Okay, so you guys are playing, and you're in high school still. This must have been something kind of odd for high school students to be playing in a live band that's booked on the weekends. I mean, how did that affect you?
Well, I remember there was a talent show we had that we played. We didn't call it work back then, but we played this talent show in Richfield High School, and I had Larry was in it, and I was in it, and Harry?
No.
Denny.
Denny Craswell.
Denny Craswell and Lonnie
and
Knight.
And Denny and Lonnie were both in ninth grade.
And we had to go to the junior high to get them out of school to come over and play this thing. And that was in probably 62, 63.
I was a sophomore, so it was in the fall of my sophomore year. And that was a big deal, actually. That was kind of it's like, wow, people actually applauded and we went, whoa, what's this all about?
You know? Rock stars.
Well, it was like, and we were just doing venture songs.
So we were everybody's buddy after that.
Yeah, all of a sudden it was kind of a cool thing, and not that we got any females out of the deal.
No, but
so your popularity level rose.
Yeah,
being in a band.
Well, yeah. It seemed to change a little bit after that. Yeah.
So now Lonnie is in the band, and you're still now it's just the Ravens, correct?
Just the Ravens. And this was from the end of 63 on.
When did Robbie leave again?
Sometime in the winter of 62, 63, I remember him. Remember we used to play gigs and he'd drive, and then he, all of a sudden he went in service. So it was maybe 6-8 months before that he left.
So what's the lineup now with Lonnie and?
It's me and Dick and Lonnie Knight and Skip Kovacs.
Okay.
And then pretty soon after that, in 63 or 64, Harry Niels came in on drums.
You know, when I remember when Skip quit to join the Navy, it was right during the time they had that earthquake up in Alaska in 1964.
That was 64.
So that's when that was, because yeah. I remember we were rehearsing in his basement, and then that was the big news flash that night, and it was just a week or two later that he gave his notice. So. Yeah.
And then Harry Niels came in, and he was in another band from Richfield called the Cymbaltons.
The Cymbaltons?
Cymbaltons.
As in drum cymbals.
Yes, and they were kind of a novelty act. They used to be more of a funny thing.
Like that.
Did you guys ever play at Danceland?
Yeah, we played there in 65. We played there.
65. Well, let's back up to February 1964. Did you watch the Beatles play live on Ed Sullivan?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What kind of impact did that have?
It was earth-shattering.
Yep.
to say the least.
I'll tell you how it was for me. I had been hearing about the Beatles long before we saw them on TV. We'd heard a couple of their records played on the local radio channels. And when they played Ed Sullivan in their suits and all really dressed up and really professional looking, it really put a different momentum to what we wanted to do as a group. And I remember right after that, because up to that point we were kind of dressing in surf type clothes and you know, shiny black shoes and no collar suit coats and stuff, and we kind of decided that it would be better to look a little more made up when you played the gigs, because they happened I guess they were just really, it went over so well on TV. They looked very professional, very.
Plus, they were really good.
Yeah, they were real good.
Really good.
And they focused on vocals, and we thought, well, we got to move into the vocal aspect of it a little
more. Kinda, yeah, that's kind of when we started singing when the Beatles came out, because before that, we didn't focus on that at all.
My recollection of the Beatles is hardly any of their stuff was three-chord stuff.
No. No.
And all of a sudden, here's a band doing all these different chord combinations.
And yeah.
Versus, none of it's your typical rock and roll three chord.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
I sort of have this vision in my mind of millions of TV sets on across America. The Beatles are playing live on Ed Sullivan for the first time. Girls and guys are screaming and fainting and passing
out.
That's
how it was.
And I can see all the parents are going, what in the world is going on here? And all the kids.
Not so much. No. You
should have heard the screaming at Met Stadium when they played there.
I was there.
Oh, my
God. Well, let me take you back, okay?
Okay.
Me and Dick were watching TV the night Elvis was on the first time. And that was when the parents were freaking out, because they wouldn't want their kids to see this guy shake his hips and do his thing. So they sent me and Dick upstairs to our rooms, which we had a TV in the room, and we watched them anyway. Now, that was totally different from when the Beatles came on, because I remember my mother was watching it with us, and she really liked them.
Really?
So it wasn't this big schism between the kids and like it was in the 50s with Elvis. That was totally different. Well, we were a lot younger. Yeah. But other than
the hair.
And the hair, but... They were charming. I mean, they couldn't find anything wrong with the Beatles. They were funny. They were good. They were talented. They were good looking. I mean, they were personalities, you know. And Elvis was a little threatening to the average parent. He was like, wait. He wasn't Frank Sinatra, you know.
Right. So did you guys start growing your hair longer?
Probably.
Right away.
Everybody did.
Yeah.
We're still in high school, and they had hair.
Oh, yeah.
Hair laws at that point were.
Oh, that's right. They did.
Seriously, I remember you could not wear jeans to school.
Dress codes.
Yeah, I remember those.
Hair
dress
laws.
Codes. Yeah.
I don't know if there were hair laws or not, but if it got over your ear,
if it went over your collar,
mm-hmm. at Richfield, they didn't like it.
So. And this was by any teacher that would choose to do that.
So did you guys start doing a couple Beatle tunes?
Yes,
well,
we did.
We tried. For us, it was a struggle because we had never sang before, you know, and all of a sudden now they got three-part harmony and all three of them are really good. And it was tough. We were more into the Kinks, to tell you the truth, and the Rolling Stones.
Another British band.
Yeah. I mean, they were a little more approachable as far as we were concerned.
So what Kink songs did you learn?
You Really Got Me and those that type. But we did do a lot of
All Day and All of the Night.
All Day
and... what was that one Harry sang?
Well-respected man.
Yeah. Well-respected man.
All that early stuff that didn't have keyboards, and we did a lot of Beatles songs. So I mean, we really did. But I can't say that we were more on the we were learning how to sing. So we were kind of coming along.
Speaking of the Beatles and the British invasion, tell me the story of the Escapades.
Okay. The Escapades. Well,
who was in the band?
Should we tell them the whole story?
Well, I can't remember the story, so you're going to have to do
okay. The
storytelling.
The way I remember it was there was a guy named Ron Butwin in early 64. Had this idea about starting a band, and they'd wear wigs and they'd wear dress real mod, and they would do nothing but Stones and Beatles songs and they would get a lot of work and they'd be rich and famous. Okay. Problem is, he didn't have a band. So the first guys he gets a hold of is me and Dick and Lonnie. Mm-hmm. And he brings us over to his house in Highland Park and he gives us this idea. And we were doing instrumentals. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we were singing a little bit, but we said, Ron, it's a great idea, but really can't see me and Dick and Lonnie doing this kind of stuff, you know. So he says, well, that's fine. Good luck. Everything's great, you know. He runs in. He gets a hold of a guy named Zippy Kaplan and Rico Rosenbaum. And I think the guy's bass player was Tom somebody. And they proceed to put this little idea together. And they shot straight up. As soon as they came out, they were almost known as an international band, and they were playing everywhere. And, of course, they had good talent in the band with Zippy and Rico singing.
Now, were they speaking with English accents?
Well, they did that first. The first time I saw them was at Lucky's, and it was in early 65. This was a little bit later.
Okay.
This was early 65. And they wouldn't come out on their breaks. And when they did, they talked with a British accent.
were they trying to pull off a scam that they were actually a British band?
I think they were trying to ride the wave is what they were trying to do, and they did for a short time, but after a while it was pretty obvious that there were some rock and roll and Jewish guys from Highland. So that's kind of what they were. So